I would like to introduce tonight's speaker. Brian, why don't I know you're because Brian from Chula Vista, Michelle's husband, that's how I know you. Bryce. I'm sorry.
No worries, don't worry.
Michelle's husband.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Bryce, and I'm an alcoholic. Michelle's husband. Anyway. Thanks for having me, and it was nice to sit here and listen to some people that I know pretty well, take some tokens and celebrate sobriety. That's always a very good thing. And I love the feeling here of that time of recognizing those celebrations. And, you know, you put all those things together, and then you also think about those are just the people that are celebrating, you know, an anniversary in time right now. But when you think about all the time that is represented in this room and all the time that's represented by the presence of this place and everything, all the impact that it has is pretty amazing. So I did a real good job. I didn't think too much about what I was going to say until the last couple days, so that's pretty good. And really, the last couple days, I really just wanted to try. I want the message to have some cohesion and purpose and perhaps have the ability to have some impact. So I tried to think about what does that mean, you know? What is it that I want to share? What have I learned? What do I think is important? My sobriety date is June 24th of 1993. So for that, I am very, very grateful. And I know, you know, a lot of times you can hear that sort of thing depending on where you're at, and you can just be like, you know, that sounds ridiculous or impossible or whatever. And for others, you know, that have been here, we know that's possible. But I can tell you, as anybody with some time will tell you, that I remember exactly what it was like to not be able to stay sober, you know, 24 hours at a time. And I remember that vividly. And I know that before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the most time I'd ever put together, you know, where I had any choice in the matter, the most time that I'd ever put together not getting loaded was like 11 days. And I had choice in the matter, but it was also like, hey, if you want to live here, you need to cut it out. And I was like, all right, you know, I can do it for a little bit. And it was 11 days, and man, was I ever miserable. You know, I was just miserable and tense and angry. I was just like, ugh. You know, but I knew, like, I don't have anywhere to go. I'm just going to, I'll stay sober for a bit. And then I was with some buddies, and the people that I live with who had said, you can't stay here if you don't stop getting loaded. And then we went and played frisbee golf. And this will tell you, like, somebody that has problems with drinking, like, you can remember the specifics of every little, you know. And that's not normal, I don't think. But so I was in the back seat, and we were coming back from playing frisbee golf. You know, it had been 11 days since I had been, you know, I was trying to be good because they told me I couldn't stay there if I didn't drink. And, or if I did drink. And I'm just sitting back there, just, you know, they're drinking Coronas in a bottle. And they said, okay, you can have one. And I was like, yes, you know. And they reached back to hand me that bottle of Corona. And I swear, he was reaching back this way, right? And before he could even turn back around, I was tapping him on the shoulder with an empty bottle. I mean, I was like, yes, sir. You know, let me just get that down as quick as I possibly can. And it was because of that feeling that I got from drinking. And honestly, that feeling that I got from drinking came every single time I took a drink. You know, for me, alcohol did not stop working. It always made me feel exactly the way. You know, every single time I felt the same way. It just changed my body. You know, it lit up every cell in my body. And I, you know, in the book, it talks about that, you know, the ease and comfort that comes at once with a few drinks. Just that feeling of like, whew. And then, you know, it got crazy after that. But, you know, the first couple drinks, that's what happened. And I never wanted to quit drinking. And, you know, this is part of my message. You know, as I got here and I've stayed sober for a good considerable period of time, and I didn't want to be here and I didn't want to stay and I didn't want to stay sober. And here I am anyway, you know. And it wasn't because I didn't need to get sober. I needed to get sober. I just didn't want to get sober. You know, there's a difference. I wanted the consequences that came along with my drinking. I wanted many of those to stop. But, again, I did not want to quit drinking. I just wanted to be able to drink without the consequences that came along with it. You know, and I had a pretty short drinking career. Only alcoholics call it a career, but I had a pretty short drinking career. I drank from about the time I was, you know, well, I had some drinks early on with my dad, you know, and loved it. I mean, immediately, again, like in every chance I get, that's what I'm doing. But then when I got the opportunity to have a little bit of control over that and drink as much as I possibly could, I started drinking when I was, you know, 14 or 15. And I will tell you that, like, immediately people were labeling me as an alcoholic. You know, this buddy would talk to that buddy, yeah, that guy's an alcoholic, man. He'd be like, no, he's not. He's like 16 years old. And then we'd hang out a little bit, be like, yeah, he is, you know. And I knew that I drank differently. You know, I knew that I drank differently. And I just figured, like, that's just the way it is. Some of us drink that way, you know, and that's just what I'm going to do. So I went from the age of about 15 until the age of 24 was the first time I really kind of came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And during that time, I had lots and lots of wreckage, lots of consequences, lots of people telling me to do something about my drinking. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse for me, as far as, like, I just couldn't keep things together. You know, some people are able to, you know, on one side, build things up and still get loaded. And I just couldn't do any of that. I couldn't do any of that. And honestly, and you know, we're all just a little different in that way. But for me, I couldn't do the most basic of things if I was drinking. I would drink, and that was it. I couldn't do anything else. I couldn't go to work. I couldn't pay bills. I couldn't show up. I would just drink. And I would have an intention. I'd say, all right, I'll see you on at 6. And then I'd show up 4 days later at 6 or something, you know, and be like, yeah, I said I'd be here at 6. I mean, I just couldn't do it, you know. And I'd be getting loaded on my balcony in my apartment and looking out at people going about their life, getting into their cars and going to work. And I literally would just go like, I don't get it. Like, how do they do it? I wish I could do that. I just can't do it. And I didn't know that it was in any way connected to drinking. I just thought I couldn't do it. And I'd go to the grocery store, and there'd be people with food and toilet paper and diapers and stuff like that. And I literally would, you know, I'd walk in, and I'd, you know, however much money I had, I'd be doing the math, and I'd load the cart up with alcohol. And there wouldn't be anything else there. It would just be alcohol. And I'd step up to the registers, you know, and I'd be like, how do they do it? I don't get it. Like, don't they understand that if you put some of that food back, you could get more alcohol? And that's just how I drank. And occasionally I would eat. You know, I remember I had this job, and I would go to, there was a convenience store called AMPM, and they had, I could get a $2 bottle of gin and some grapefruit juice that I think was $1, and then 2 hot dogs. And so I'd have 2 hot dogs that were like 2 for $1, and I'd put onions and jalapenos on there. And so that was breakfast, along with my gin and juice. You know, I thought gin and juice was cool or something. And then I would drive this company van to work, you know. Yeah, that's how that went. And my last weekend drinking, I was in the company van on a Sunday, and there were agencies that were looking for me, I find out later, because I was driving erratically and being reported and all these things, right? I didn't remember any of these things, but I did know when the lights went on, if you've ever had this experience, the lights went on behind me, and I was like, ah, you know, and like, that's when you come, you're like, things start to come together, and you're like, ah, man. And so I just like, I didn't even try to fight it, defend it, do anything. I just poured myself out of the car, put my hands behind my back, and was like, yep, you know? And they rolled me off somewhere, and then I just got super pathetic, you know? I got nothing, man, my life is, man. And it was weird, they put me in a cab and sent me home, but I went straight to the bar to get my wallet because I thought I left my wallet there. It was empty, of course, but I had a couple of drinks and then went home. But then that was on a Saturday, and then on Sunday, I knew I had to go to work on Monday, and I was like, where is the van that I was driving yesterday? That's the company van, big old $60,000 company van, you know, with wheelchair lifts and stuff. I'm like, man, I can't call them up and say I don't know where it is. So at that time, you still had a payphone. So I went to a payphone, and I called a couple of law enforcement agencies to find out, excuse me, I know this is really odd, but I got pulled over yesterday. Do you know where my van is? And no, we were looking for you, but we couldn't find you. They said, you know, try the Tempe police or something. And I was like, okay. And I finally did. I called another number, and the dispatcher was like, oh, yeah, I was here when you came in. And they told me they didn't actually take the van. They just had me park it. So they were like, it's right over there on Rural and Broadway. I was like, all right, sweet. So I went and got the van, and I parked the van. And this is the alcoholic in me, right? That I figured problem solved, you know? So I thought to myself, first of all, just remember where the van is, right? Here's where the van is. You parked it right there. Etch that in your memory. And then I went off and drank, you know? And it was Sunday, and I'd gotten paid on Friday. All my money was gone. You know, I just had this thing. And it wasn't the worst day I ever had drinking by any stretch of the imagination. Not by any stretch of the imagination was this the worst day I ever had drinking. But I was at work the next day, and for the first time in my life, there was just a clarity of how low the quality of my life was at that moment, and how controlled and at the mercy of drugs and alcohol I was. I just had no life. I was at the control of drugs and alcohol. And what the awareness that I had at that time that I vividly remember and that actually scared me for the first time ever was that I knew if I didn't do something different there during the day while I was at work before 4 o'clock, I knew exactly what was going to happen at 4:01. I was going to hop in the van. I was going to roll by AM, PM. I was going to drive to the bar, and it'd be off, you know? So I opened up the phone book and started looking for places, you know, like what could I do different? Well, who can I call? And I started with some like treatment centers. And at the time there was this place called Charter Treatment Center or something. And I remembered their commercials. They were like, if you don't get help here, please get help somewhere. And I was like, I'm gonna call Charter. So I called Charter and they said, you know, do you have insurance? No. And so, you know, they asked me all these uncomfortable questions. And I was like, yeah. It might not be that bad, and then I found Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book, you know? And so then I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were like East Valley Intergroup, that was in Phoenix where I ended up getting sober. And I was like, yeah, I'm looking for a meeting, and they were like, yeah, well, there's this meeting right around the corner. It was only a couple blocks from where I was, and they said, you know, I said, okay. And they said, why don't you just show up, you know, and if you don't like it, you can leave. And I was like, that is perfect. You know, that was the level of commitment that I had to getting sober at that point in time, was just give me some place I can poke my head in, see what I think, and then. So I can't remember if I went to a meeting that night or if it took me a couple of days. It seems to me like it took me a couple of days, and I was going through, like, how do I want to look when I show up at this meeting, you know? And but what was weird was it wasn't like I wanted to dress in business attire or anything and try to, I was like, I want to dress so that I look comfortable there. You know what I mean? Like it's not my first time and I've already been there before. But, you know, of course I rolled in and everybody knew it was my first day, you know? But again, I got there. I didn't want to be there. Again, I wanted the consequences to stop. I thought maybe I could get the girl back that I was with and, you know, maybe I could, pay rent consistently, have a place to stay. I kept having to couch surf because I would lose whatever place I was in. You know, what happened for me was I would drink so heavily at certain times that I would just, I'm not telling you that I would black out for months at a time, but what I will tell you is that, like, I would have, what do they call it, that moment of when you're lucid, right? I would have those moments of lucidity where I knew what was going on, and I would be like, wow, I really don't know what's been happening for the last few months. You know, like yes, I was there, I showed up, I was sometimes coherent, but there was just so much drinking and so much going on, and I was just going from one getting loaded to the next that I just really could not tell you what happened. And what would I, the holidays in the winter time, I would just go under, you know, like it would come about Thanksgiving time, you know, as that approached, somewhere in the November time frame, and I would just be in the middle, in the cups, so to speak, you know, and just doing all the crazy things and just going day to day. And then the next thing I would know, it would be like middle of January when I would start to be lucid again, and I would be like, oh, what kind of mess did I make? And, oh, that person's really mad at me. And, you know, why am I living over here instead of where I was in December, you know? And just having to kind of put it back together. You know, what happened to the car that I had? Do I have a job? No, I don't have a job. Ah, you know, and that would happen. And then I would be pretty lucid from January until May-ish. And then, you know, spring fever would hit and the summer would happen. And I'd just be like, time to go, you know. And then I would lose it again from early June until August, you know, and then I would get lucid again, you know. So literally I would have a few months here and a few months there where I was trying to put it together, and then it would all come apart, you know. And unfortunately it got harder and harder to really put much of anything together, you know. I ended up working at one of the last jobs I had before the business van thing. I ended up working at a Circle K in a really bad part of town overnight in Phoenix and 16th Street and Oak. And, you know, I had heard in some meetings something, you know, give an alcoholic a rut and he'll move in. And that was kind of like my thing, right? Like this was about as, like nobody would take that job. And I felt right at home, you know? I was just like, these are my people, you know? With all the drunks rolling in, and there was this old guy named Jack that would drink six packs of Heidelberg for $1.99 in his wheelchair, and he'd sit in there in the Circle K, and we'd just chat and chat and chat, and he'd pee on the floor, and I'd go get a mop, you know, and we'd just hang out, me and Jack, you know, and then the ladies of the night would come walking in, we'd have our conversations, blah, 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 blah. You know, obviously I got fired from that job. There are stories there, but, and it was right next to the Playtime Lounge, which was really, I mean, that's just all you need to know right there, right? The Playtime Lounge. So that was what was happening. And then I got that other job, and then I just couldn't keep it together. And I'm only 24 years old, and I'm thinking, what is going on here? You know, but still the idea of not drinking, like forever, just did not seem like a very reasonable idea, you know. But I was really fortunate. You know, I made those phone calls to AA and showed up at this little club in Tempe, Arizona, and it was called The Bloopers. And there was this old guy named John Capra that ran that place, and it wasn't, I mean, it was a club, and they had AA meetings, but there were things about it that weren't very AA, you know, because it was kind of like, it was John's place, and whatever John said went, and so if John didn't like something, that's the way it was going to be. And it was just it was an interesting place. The address of that place was 1935 Apache, East Apache, which the 1935 thing is pretty interesting. So I started going to that hall, and it was a great place because it was a place that had like four meetings a day or something, you know, started early, had them noon, 5:30, 8:30, whatever, you know. And when I first got sober, again, I didn't know how to do anything other than get loaded. I didn't know how to do functional things. So I kept going to that job that I somehow still had. And then I would go to the 5:30 meeting and the 5:30 p.m. meeting and the 8:30 p.m. meeting. I just didn't know what else to do, you know. And for the first month, I didn't even clean my apartment. Like, you know, there was the beer bottles and just because I couldn't even think to do that. And but there were a bunch of young people in that meeting and a bunch of old timers, and they had a beginners and slippers meeting, and that was a couple times a week, and the beginner slippers meeting was in a small trailer, and I felt much more comfortable in the beginner slippers meeting than I did in a big meeting, you know? And I realized looking back that I immediately started learning the things that I needed to learn in order to go through that psychic change that's required to live life sober. You know, and I didn't know that it was gonna happen at the time. I certainly didn't want it, you know, but it, because of showing up, because of being around those people and participating and being listening, and it started to happen. And it had to start like really at a very, very simple level, because I didn't think that Alcoholics Anonymous was for me. And this is how I wanted to try to structure the speech tonight, and I hope it's how it comes across. Is I feel like if there's, you know, one person in here that walks away from tonight and feels a little bit more like maybe I could have this thing or maybe I belong here, then I feel like that's the type of impact that I would like to have, because that was what was necessary for me when I got here. Before I could ever start the steps, before I could ever start, you know, a relationship with a power greater than myself or any of that stuff, I had to believe that I belonged here and believe that maybe there was something here for me that could maybe change my life, improve my life. And I didn't think I can remember little things that happened that sound stupid today, but I know at the time they were like mind-blowing and you know. There was this guy named Doug Bell that had like 2 or 3 years sober, a fairly young guy when I first got sober. And we looked kind of, you know, he was a long-haired dude. I was a long-haired dude. We thought we were really cool. And so I related to Doug Bell, you know. And I remember he got up and got his medallion and was talking, you know. And he said, like, long-haired dudes can get sober too. And I was just like, yeah, you know. You know, little things. And then I remember this guy named Jared who was saying something about ego projection, and I was so mad at him, you know, because he was saying what was me, you know. And so I didn't like it. I was like, I don't like that guy, you know. But I'll tell you what, I think the most impactful thing for me was going to those beginners and slippers meetings that I went to twice a week in the trailer. Because there were some old guys there, and there were some guys with time, and there were a few guys that only had like 5 or 6 years or something, but we'd sit at just one or two little tables, only about 12 guys, and there was also this guy there named Brad who had a real, real heavy, thick Southern drawl and would just say things that were really, he'd say, newcomer, you know, and Michelle and I still laugh about that like 30 years later, you know, and let's go get us some newcomers, man. And what else? Oh, he'd always say, they don't make a bag of shit big enough for two or something like that. I mean, he had all these little things, right, you know? And so, and he had 5 or 6 years sober, right? And again, when I was trying to figure things out, 5 or 6 years sober, or these new and younger people, that made a little more sense to me. You know, an old guy named Ralph, who I grew to love later, you know, he had like 20 years when I got there, and I was like, yeah, whatever, old guy, you know? So I really needed that time that I was spending with the beginners and slippers, you know? And I would literally sit in there at the meeting, and they'd be going around and saying how their life had changed and everything got better and blah, blah, blah. And I would just say, well, it might be great for you guys, but it's not going to work for me. You know, literally, not going to work for me. That's great for you guys, but it's not going to work for me. And I think one one night they just kind of got tired of it, you know. And they broke out, and I always get confused, even though I've already looked it up. But I think it's the forward to the third edition, but it's either the second or the third. But it's the one, I won't go into the literature stuff because anybody can do that, but... it's the one where it says, you know, we are now like 90,000 groups in a whole bunch of different places, and the steps work even if it's los dos etapos, or, you know, all these other languages and stuff. Basically, it says, you know, the steps work no matter what, no matter where you go. And so they read that and they said, so what you're telling us is that all these people from all these different backgrounds and all these different places can get sober, but you can't. And I was like, dang. You know, that's exactly what I was saying, but you attack my ego, and now I can't really go with that. But then I walked, I mean, literally, it was like a light went off. You know, I remember, walked out of the trailer, walked home to my apartment, half a mile away, three quarters of a mile away, and I was thinking about it. I was like, dang, all those people can get sober. Huh, maybe I can too, you know? And I think that literally probably the first time I ever thought in my life, maybe I could get sober. Because I just figured that Alcoholics Anonymous and all this stuff was just time in between drinks. Because that's all that anything had ever been in the time that was just time in between drinks. I had no experience, I had no reason to believe that this was going to be any different until that moment, you know? And then I was like, wow, maybe this could be different. And I'm grateful to the people that spent time with me when I was, you know, again, put up with all that, you know, spent time with me when I first got sober. There was this guy named Richard Quiñones, and he would pick me up every Saturday morning, and we'd move people. I mean, he didn't say, you know, I'm going to pick you up and we're going to move people. But every time he showed up, we went and moved people. And after this had happened a few times, you know, I'm 6, 7 weeks in or something, and every Saturday I'm moving people. And so finally, you know, we're driving up, and what got me was he said, we're going to go get a couch up there on the second floor. And I was just like, man, this is garbage. I'm not doing it. And so I started complaining, you know. I was like, what am I doing, man? And I thought, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going up there to get that couch. And he just stopped and looked at me. And he said, how many weeks you got sober? I said, 7. He said, how many weeks have we been moving stuff? I said, 7. And he said, okay, I'm going to go get that couch. And I was just like, okay, you know. And I'm really grateful to that guy. And he got loaded later. And I remember him. And actually, he got loaded later. And there was a day I was at work. This was, you know, 15 years later or something. My life's pretty good. I'm working as a school teacher. I had some stuff happen at school where it was just like a kick in the chest. And everybody was going to happy hour, and I wanted to go to happy hour, and I was pissed off. And I called my buddy, and he said, I'll meet you at the meeting. And I was like, all right. And I went to the meeting, and I saw Richard Quiñones loaded that night, you know? And I was just like, man. You know, and so I hung out with Richard Quiñones, and we did a couple meetings, and we ran around. And by the end of the night, I was like, it was gone. You know, that thing I was going to drink over was gone. You know, and it was a lesson for me. And I wouldn't have done that on my own. So all those people, all those little things, you know, again, it didn't have anything to do with the steps. It didn't, you know, at that time when I first got sober and was doing beginner slippers meetings, I didn't get a sponsor right away. Not that that's recommended, just didn't happen. And then finally, I did finally ask, like I was out playing pool with Jerry or something. I'd been hanging out with Jerry for a while. And finally, I got up the nerve to ask him to be my sponsor. And he's like, I thought you already had a sponsor. I'm like, no. You know, so then we hung out. And I picked Jerry because he was super low key, like super just mellow, low key. Find your truth, man. And I was like, yeah. That's the kind of guy that I need to sponsor me. Some people are like, I need somebody to tell me. I was like, no thanks. And so I was like, I'm going with Jerry. And even John Capra, I told you that, he was like, why are you with that? I can't remember the term he used, but something like fuddy-duddy or whatever, you know, something like that. He's like, but anyway, so I asked Jerry to sponsor me, and that was great. And so, you know, he was sponsoring me. I was hanging out, chatting with him, and there was a Friday night, I was at the bloopers and I was sitting on the fence, which, you know, that's what you did when you didn't really go into the meeting and participate. I just sitting on the fence, talking with young people, doing whatever, you know, hanging out. And Jerry came up to me and he said, I want you to come to my house with your four step done on Saturday morning. And I was like, whoa, what happened to mellow low key Jerry, you know? I thought, man, I might have to get a new sponsor. What is that crap, you know? And so, and, you know, again, none of this is recommended. You don't have to do it this way. This is just honestly what happened for me. So I would just, like, blew it off and went blah, blah, blah. Friday night rolled around. I was supposed to be there Saturday morning. I was like, man, I guess maybe I got to make a decision, right? I either got to get my four step done and show up at Jerry's, or I got to not show up. And so I sat down and I wrote my four step as best I could at that time. And I showed up at Jerry's house. And again, that was a life-changing day for me. You know, it was just, that's my experience. Because, and I'll tell you, the analogy, the way that I felt about it was, I went to Jerry's that morning with what I had written for my four-step, and I felt completely broken, and I felt like I was just always trying to be hip, slick, and cool, and what I realized was I was just running from having to feel about anything. You know, I didn't want to look at anything. I didn't want to feel anything. I didn't want to dig into any of that stuff. Not at all. I didn't want to do it. And so I felt like I showed up at Jerry's house with, you know, like just picture, you know, like a broken down, beat up truck with a bunch of stuff in it, and then a trailer in the back with a bunch of stuff in it, like just this mess, right? Just this mess that represented my life, you know? And I spent a few hours with Jerry, and I tried to be as honest as I possibly could, and I really did share a lot of things, and there was a lot, so much more, like relating to one another that I possibly could have ever even imagined, and so much more. And he'd say, yeah, yeah, and he also said, do you see the pattern of this happening over and over and over and over and over and over again in your life? And I didn't, but I was like, wow, yeah, I guess you're right. And so then I came away from that meeting with Jerry, instead of having, you know, this big, long train of crap, I had like a nice, tidy little short U-Haul full of crap. You know, but it was just the same stuff. I mean, I realized it was just all those basic character defects that were on steroids and crazy and over and over and over again for me. The fear, you know, the selfishness, everything, you know, just, and it just came up in so many different ways in my life and so intensely that it wrecked everything, you know. And so to come away from that experience, I felt completely different because I felt differently about who I was and what my life had been and why things had happened and why I felt the way, just all that stuff, right? And then, I don't know, but I would imagine if you could go back and ask anyone that I was hanging out with at the time, it was probably the most annoying time to be around me that you can possibly imagine. Because I came away from it just being like, I just so freaked out and so different. I just didn't even know, I didn't know how to act or be or, you know, and I was going to meetings and I'd be like, I'm human, man. And they'd be like, yeah. But I never felt human in my life. You know what I mean? I just had never felt okay. I'd never felt like I was a part of, you know, I didn't feel like I was a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really didn't feel like I was part of the human race. Like I said, I just felt so different and I couldn't do the things that other people could do that I just didn't think I just didn't think I got it, you know? And so for the first time in my life after that fourth and fifth step, I felt like maybe I could step on in and be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, be a part of everybody else, be just like everybody else, be normal. You know, it was just such a huge change. And I went from being somebody that like always looked down and like couldn't really look at people and was shifty and everything, you know, because I just couldn't stand and talk to people. And I was able to get away from that, you know. I was able to actually look at people in the eye and talk to people and not be a shoe guy, you know. And so it was really, really cool. And I have not by any means been, you know, perfect and enthusiastic all the time and all these things about Alcoholics Anonymous. I've made a lot of mistakes and done a lot of things. Fallen short, I guess is what I would say, fallen short. But I haven't gotten loaded from that time to this. And I've made steady progress in a lot of ways. I've made steady progress. And, you know, I can say today, and this is the part that really is amazing and awesome for me, and it is promised in the book, you know, but I just, again, I didn't know it would be something that I would ever experience. But I always thought, when I first got here, I thought the thing that kept us together was the fact that we had that tragic experience being loaded, you know, because you tell the war stories and everybody's like, laughs, and, you know, I got 60 UIs, yeah, you know, whatever. So, I mean, we all get that, right? And so that's the first, like, connection, the belonging that I understood. But then in the book where it talks about, but that's only one part of the cement that binds us, and really it's about that solution, you know, that we found a way out that we can join in brotherly and harmonious action, you know? And when I realized that that was the ticket, you know, that life-changing experience, that way out, that's really what holds us together, not the experience getting loaded. You know, that was really awesome. And I've had some really important people like Jerry in my life that have changed me a lot in recovery. And there was this old guy named Kunkel, and Michelle and I were just talking. We don't even really know his first name. He was just Kunkel. And he was a, man, he was a crazy, crazy dude. And most people couldn't really sit with Kunkel because he would just go on and be over here and be over there and just tell these crazy stories, you know. But there was something about Kunkel that I just enjoyed, you know, and I'd hang out with Kunkel and we'd drink coffee. And he was at this construction job and he had his foot, like basically just a scaffold came down and caught his foot and basically just took his foot off. And he went to the hospital and they put his foot back together and it had this big cage on it, you know, with a bunch of like just all these rods and everything going into it. And like the only reason it was in one piece was because he had all this contraption holding it together. And there was a whole bunch of infection, just really horrible, awful stuff, you know. And Kunkel was like, hey, I can't drive to my doctor's appointments and stuff. And I got doctor's appointments like a couple days a week. You think you can, you know, give me a ride to the doctor's office? And I was really put out. I was like, no, I don't think so. But I was like, okay, I'll do it. You know? And man, those were, I can't even believe. I mean, those were, like, he spent time with, like, he said, you'd always say, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like, I was helping him out, you know, but he had, I don't even know how much time sober, and he taught me so much, you know, and he knew the book, and he just weave these stories, and then all of a sudden, I'd be like, whoa. And so he was in the hospital, and he said, let's do a 12 and 12 study. And I was like, okay, sure. And we were doing stuff, and we were going through the steps in the 12 and 12 a little. And we got to step 6, and in there it says, you know, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. And right then and there, I knew, like, I'm a boy. I get it, you know, because I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about. But we went through that. And again, that was a life-changing experience for me. And in the 12 and 12, it talks about step 6 being like how you establish standards. That's not the word I want to use, but that's okay. Ideals, right? Ideals for behavior and ideals for your life, and that you shoot for those things. And that when you fall short, doesn't mean we get drunk. No, not if we're sorry and we keep shooting to, you know. It was literally like a design for living. It was a design for living. It was a design to set those ideals and those standards and then try to live up to them. And also, Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps and everything else gave me the process when I did fall short that I didn't have to drink over it. You know, I didn't have to kill myself over it. I didn't have to do any of those things. That I could go to somebody and I could say, I'm struggling with this. This is the ideal that I have set for myself and I can't meet it. And it's killing me. You know, I got this gap between my insides and my outsides. I know today that I do not function well with a gap between my insides and my outsides. And that was a huge part of getting loaded and fading out and not paying attention to anything and losing months at a time, was there was such a huge gap between my, you know, what I wanted it to look like on the outside and what it felt like on the inside. And so I've got to be really careful in Alcoholics Anonymous and staying sober to try to keep that gap as small as possible, you know. The other thing that I kind of wanted to make sure that I got into my messaging is just that, you know, if you're coming around and you're struggling in any way, you know, I wanted to have my verbiage be different because I don't want to really be preaching at anybody, but the whole thing is that, like, the only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous is to the desire to stop drinking, right? But it doesn't mean we pick and choose, right? I mean, at least it's been my experience. Like, I'm not giving you permission to take step 1 and take step 4 and do this and that, because that's probably not going to work out very well, right? But what I am saying is that, Jerry said, find your truth, you know? That's the thing. So again, those ideals, that stuff, there are principles underlying, there is a process underlying the steps, and you have to do the process completely, I believe, right? That's been my experience anyway, right? Like when I have that gap and stuff is when I'm avoiding doing something, like the process is there, I'm supposed to be doing it, and I'm not, and so I don't feel good, you know? But the thing is, like, I also have enough confidence today, like I've been given a design for living, you know, and I've been given the tools that if I'm doing the right things, you know, if I'm asking for guidance, if I'm doing the right things, if I'm checking in with other people to make sure I'm not, like, way off base, then I have an effective way to make decisions and move through my life, right? And I certainly, again, I told you I couldn't function and do the most basic things, right? So I couldn't do that when I got here. So I have been given that design for living. I've been given that model, that plan, that guidance, that, you know, that framework that is effective and works, you know, to stay sober, live reasonably happy, be productive, and contribute to others. And I never knew that I would have the ability to contribute to others. So, you know, if you're here and you're just trying to get it figured out, I hope that you can take a little bit of something from what I had to share and maybe feel like maybe this place is for you. Maybe it's here for you as well. Maybe it's available for you. And also not to get too hung up on the things that don't make sense to you right now. Like, that was part of my problem when I first got, like, I just got hung up on everything that didn't make sense to me, you know? Like, and just, I got to figure this out, and I got to figure that out, and this higher power thing, what the heck is that? And really, you don't have to do all of those things right now. Get around some people that you trust, some people that you can ask for help, some people that you know have your best interest at heart and can help guide you through that stuff. And the last thing that I did want to share, and I'll go to the book for it, it just says, the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book. Upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. And that's what I would encourage for you, is just that you can have that experience and don't get hung up on it too much. Just have faith that you're going to be able to have that experience that is necessary for you to have the psychic change that's necessary for overcoming alcoholism. And the last little bit on there is a solution. It says, we hope that no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that we will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, and I must have this thing. Thanks for letting me share.
Your glasses?
Thank you very much. All right, where are we? Let's see. I would like to thank Bryce. And hope you come back to visit us soon. See, I'm a quick learner. I would also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. We will now close in the usual manner with a prayer of our speaker's choice.